Continuing with Proudhon, the notion of justice, which has been regarded by some philosophers as simple, is then, in reality, complex. It springs from the social instinct on one hand and the idea of equality on the other. Just as the notion of guilt arises from the feeling that justice has been violated and from the idea of free will. God, that's interesting. It's funny because I don't have time much to reflect. Something will strike me here. And I realize I didn't get fully what he was saying. This happens to me a lot. Most recently, just this morning, I was realizing that I did not do justice to that line from the song Thieves in the Temple, when he says, I feel like they're looking for my soul, like a poor man looking for gold. That he was putting his finger on that these folk are lost. But anyway, I want to somehow do better justice to the full meaning that he has in, I mean, the profound meanings that I did not capture very well, and hopefully will themselves get recalled and restored naturally in the flow of these shows, because all these themes interweave. Prince's meanings, Proudhon's meanings, our focus, our need for freedom, all intertwine. So what I was just saying is that I hadn't fully appreciated his interweaving, Proudhon's interweaving of our social instinct with our thought process. Because we're going to mention that again in a second, so I'm noting it mostly for myself right now when I listen again. So, continuing. In conclusion, instinct is not modified by acquaintance with its nature. And the facts of society, which we have thus far observed, occur among beasts as well as men. We know the meaning of justice, in other words, of sociability, viewed from the standpoint of equality. We have met with nothing which separates us from the animals. Moving then to the third degree of sociability. The reader, perhaps, has not forgotten what was said in the third chapter, which we haven't read yet, concerning the division of labor and the specialty of talents. The sum total of the talents and capacities of the race is always the same, and their nature is always similar. We are all born poets, mathematicians, philosophers, artists, artisans, or farmers, but we're not born equally endowed, and between one man and another in society, or between one faculty and another in the same individual, there is an infinite difference. This difference of degree in the same faculties, this predominance of talent in certain directions, is, we have said, the very foundation of our society. And my comment, he's describing true wealth, the foundation of our honest, joyous, free, just society. Continuing, intelligence and natural genius have been distributed by nature so economically and yet so liberally that in society there is no danger of either a surplus or a scarcity of special talents, and that each laborer, by devoting himself to his function, may always attain to the degree of proficiency necessary to enable him to benefit by the labors and discoveries of his fellows. Owing to this simple and wise precaution of nature, the laborer is not isolated by his task. He communicates with his fellows through the mind before he is united with them in heart, so that with him, love is born of intelligence. And I have to say, I don't believe I've heard this idea expressed quite so clearly before. despite the experience being so common, the rule, in fact, of our spiritual communion, love is born of a merging of minds, a thought that must be intentionally suppressed to be so little expressed. Continue. It's not so with societies of animals. In every species, the aptitudes of all the individuals, though very limited, are equal in number, and when they are not the result of instinct, in intensity. Each one does as well as all the others what all the others do. And I commented, I've observed a few female birds of many species who might dispute this. Continuing. Provides his food, avoids the enemy, burrows in the earth, builds a nest, etc. No animal, when free and healthy, expects or requires the aid of his neighbor, who, in his turn, is equally independent. And I know he's excluding the case of mates who, you know, build things together, you know, we know this. Associated animals live side by side, without any intellectual intercourse or intimate communication, all doing the same things, having nothing to learn or to remember. And my comment, I am certain more is taught between generations and perhaps between associates than we know of. I recall reading about the females in a group of monkeys who observed and afterwards seemed to be mocking by imitating and cackling a bit. Human mating rituals. I think grabbing of their breasts was involved. And my son learned from a documentary that knowledge within an elephant tribe of the location of salt caves was taught by the older elephants to the younger ones, knowledge that was being lost with the killing of the older elephants due to human predation. Continuing with Proudhon, they see, feel, and come in contact with each other, but never penetrate each other, and I say, commenting, except perhaps through a spiritual communion, a merging of minds. Continuing. Man continually exchanges with man ideas and feelings, products and services. Every discovery and act in society is necessary to him. But of this immense quantity of products and ideas, that which each one has to produce and acquire for himself is but an atom in the sun. Man would not be man were it not for society. And society is supported by the balance and harmony of the powers which compose it. And I comment, this paragraph deserves our prolonged attention, certainly our broad and deep discussion, for the weight it brings to our community conversations about the absolutely critical need for us to reclaim our world and define for ourselves, unencumbered by the presumptions of power, the global state statesman, society. For Proudhon's clear analysis, subsequently corroborated by Carl Polanyi and others, has shown us that in the absence of equality among us, which requires ending the practice of quantifying and ranking, commodifying humans, there is no society. And has persuasively made the case that the necessary foundation of a society is the balance and harmony of the rich talents and capacities of each one of us which compose it. The sum, quote from Proudhon, the sum total of the talents and capacities of the race is always the same, and their nature is always similar. We are all born poets, mathematicians, philosophers, artists, artisans, or farmers, but we're not born equally endowed. And between one man and another in society, or between one faculty and another in the same individual, there is an infinite difference. This difference of degree in the same faculties, this predominance of talent in certain directions is, we have said, the very foundation of our society. We must then, unquote, we must then ask ourselves, what has become of our richness, our true wealth, balance and harmony and revelation of potential are the biases of the earth. The tiny few, obsessed with rule, have other biases. Their priority is to close possibilities, wither our power. Waste is what we see when we allow a tiny few to play at being kings. They waste our lives and our rich capacities. This perversion of truth is what has become of our richness. We have a system that says it will tell us if we are needed, that unless it can make use of our services, we are essentially worthless. This insanity is completely backwards. Each human being is a treasure trove of endless surprises and delights. In a world set aright on its proper foundation, each day we eagerly await the discovery of the happy surprises we find within ourselves and in each other. The insanity imposed has naught to do with earth, but all to do with the fear of a tiny few. So small they must beat us into dust to have a glimmer of shine by comparison. That we accept such dreariness from this deluded so-called best is solely due to this tiny few withholding from us the truth.